Greetings, and welcome to Talking Who to You, a podcast dedicated to the big finish audio adventures of Doctor Who. My name is JG Macquarie, and as always, I'm here with my co-host Kev Kozer. Say hi, Kev.
Hi.
Are we ready to return to Evelyn's world?
I mean, I'm a bit ready, but I've been feeling really short-tempered this week, and after listening to this story, I think I might need to get that checked out.
Yeah, I think I've got a fairly good idea of why. So yeah, this week we are going to be covering Thicker Than Water. So we are going to be covering the Sixth Doctor and Mel and Evelyn. So Kev, you want to give us our usual summary, please?
Thicker Than Water picks up with the Sixth Doctor post-Evelyn with Mel, but deciding to visit Evelyn where he last left her, giving us her departure story as well, as she decided to stay on V-Log with her now husband Rossiter from the story Arrangements for War. While there, she gets involved in a conspiracy involving Kaloran genetic manipulation, also involving her stepdaughter, who does not quite like her, and some very generic villains. But mostly this is a story about the Sixth Doctor finally giving a proper goodbye to the companion who loves him, and he, even though we can't admit it, we know he loves her back.
Yeah, that's just about the measure of it. So, yeah, this is a... I really appreciate what this story is trying to do. I don't think it really achieves everything that it's trying to do, but there's a lot of good effort in there, and I can sort of feel that its heart is in the right place, even if its brain doesn't always quite manage to measure up to. But how did you find it?
That's a pretty good description. I really admire how doing a sequel to Arrangements for War, like the natural instinct is to go bigger and bolder. Arrangements for War, like in Big Finish standards especially, is just such already a huge story, spending a long time and a whole planetary conflict. So it was smart to sort of scale it down, be very focused on the characters of Doctor and Evelyn, and just develop them and give them a sort of proper epilogue to their adventures. And I really, yeah, appreciate that this sort of hits a middle ground between a sort of a classic Who and a new Who goodbye that I can get into later, but back on initial impressions, that all I really appreciate. The story, though, even if the story's not the main focus, it's still so boring, and it's hard to get around that, because you still have to have a good, like, central conflict, a good, like, alien menace or whatever. Not alien in this case, but you know what I mean. That otherwise, it's just sort of falls flat, so that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, this obviously wants to be a proper character piece, and it wants to keep its focus very much on the character work. I don't think the writing is quite strong enough to carry that off. And, you know, like, Paul Sutton is not a name that we've really come across much as far as this is concerned, as far as the main range is concerned. I don't think we've covered anything that he's done yet, actually. Oh, well, apart from Arrangements for War, obviously. But so, I mean, it is a sequel to his own story, but he's not, you know, he's not one of the common names that we come across. And, I mean, this does feel like a very clear step down, I think, from Arrangements for War. I had a few criticisms when we covered that as well, especially with that slightly rushed ending. But there was a lot here that just feels... Like you said, I appreciate the fact that it's going for a smaller scale. It's not trying to outdo a sort of big alien invasion or a planetary takeover or anything like that. It's just trying to keep itself, you know, focused on these characters. But they're, I mean, what's kind of weird about this is the fact that ostensibly this is a story about Evelyn and about Evelyn's kind of, it's her last story meaningfully. And, you know, it's about that conclusion to the relationship between her and the Doctor. And she spends two episodes essentially unconscious. You know, she has very little to do in the last couple of episodes. And that's kind of a weird choice when the whole sort of raison d'etre of your piece is to try and, you know, analyze and sort of examine the relationship between these two characters.
Yeah, I noticed that too, and it's really sad. Like, Arrangements for War, for all its scope, I think winds up getting better Dr. Evelyn moments out of it.
Yeah.
And just because this, it keeps them apart for so long, too. Basically, from the kidnapping end of episode 1 until the end of episode 4, basically, Evelyn and the Sixth Doctor are kept completely apart. And that is very frustrating because it's all about them. And they have a great, sweet little forgiveness scene at the end. And you do have the flashbacks interspersed in the middle. But, yeah. And I know there's going to be more Evelyn Sixth Doctor stories released after this. It's still very frustrating that this is supposed to be their goodbye, and it's very much not about them. It's about it becomes about this other sort of side story almost.
Well, I think the play sort of starts off trying to do the right thing as far as that's concerned, and especially the second episode, which is a lot of that episode is just sort of Mel and Evelyn talking to each other whilst they're sort of being held hostage in a small apartment. And I get the impression, or well, I don't get the impression, I think it does, you know, actively use Mel to sort of interrogate that relationship and see that relationship from the outside. And that's great, assuming that we then get to see that relationship from the inside as well. And that's the bit that's missing. So I think it starts off really understanding how it wants to get to grips with the characters here, but it kind of sidetracks itself into kind of like the main plot. The main plot is just the most generic kind of bad, evil scientist does bad, evil things for bad, evil reasons kind of plot. There's not a lot of meat in the bones there. And Paul Sutton just seems to sort of derail himself into that kind of very generic plot. And the sort of good character work that we get earlier on fades away to nothing, which is a real shame, because I really love that second episode. Like, Bonnie Langford is great in that second episode. And, you know, we love Maggie Stables. We love our Bonnie as well. Of course we do. But, you know, it's like we know that Maggie Stables is fantastic as Evelyn. But the way that Bonnie Langford is just really quiet and sort of nicely underplaying everything, giving Evelyn the chance to kind of admit her feelings and come out of her shell and sort of be more emotionally honest with Mel, that's so great. That's exactly what this play needs more of. And one of the reasons I think it is so frustrating is that we get these glimpses, but that's all we get. And it needs so much more than that.
Let's stay with Bonnie Langford for a bit before moving past her, because she is really good in this story and really holds her own with these like titans of a doctor companion pair. There are so many little moments I love. She has two great confrontations with Szabo. First, sort of figuring it out, like being suspicious of him before he throws her down an elevator shaft. And second, at the end, where she gets to lay out his master plan because she's figured it out. Like, she really is like a very smart character. And it's great when people remember that Mel is a very smart person. And also, her banter with the Sixth Doctor is still really well written. Big Finish has really sort of latched on to what worked when those two characters interacted on the TV show in their very brief time together and really fleshed it out. I love the opening episode where you have Mel and the Doctor, like, Mel sort of chiding the Doctor for not being polite to the people he's rescuing and being this very arrogant, brash person. That was a very cute scene.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit weird because they're trying to use Mel in almost the same way that Evelyn sort of treats the Sixth Doctor, which is to kind of, you know, stand up to him and sort of get him to back down. And that's a slightly unusual use of Mel, but it does contrast well with the way that Evelyn deals with him. When I was talking before, I didn't mean to kind of blow past Bonnie Langford, because she really is great here. As you say, it's just lovely when they remember that she's a smart girl. She's not just, you know, somebody who either sort of sounds a bit quiet or sort of trails along after the Doctor. She's such a warm character here. And again, that when two companions meet, and I'm thinking specifically of Rose and Sarah Jane here in the new series, but when we get these sort of companions that meet sort of out sequence or whatever, or that get thrown together in unusual ways, there's only really sort of two ways it can go. Either they have this kind of artificially generated sort of conflict, which Rose and Sarah Jane do, even though I'm quite fond of that episode, or they end up kind of sort of being sort of best buddies. And this kind of splits the difference quite nicely. So I like the way that Mel clearly gets on and sort of likes and respects Evelyn, but they don't just immediately become like the bestest buddies. And I think that a lot of that does rest again on that second episode, where Mel just sort of quietly allows herself to underplay so that Evelyn can be more sort of open and honest. And that's a really nice use of Mel's character. I greatly appreciate, because it makes her seem like, it makes Mel seem like she's got this kind of emotional maturity, like she has grown up a bit during her travels with the Doctor, even though she still retains all her kind of basic characteristics that we're familiar with. And that's just such nice writing for Mel. So yeah, all that stuff is great.
Paul Sutton is definitely a writer who thinks about like what traveling with the Doctor would change a person. And a lot of that Evelyn sort of spells out explicitly. talking about how the few years she traveled with the doctors changed her so much, and she got to see so many things, and she's forever thankful to him, and talking about how different she is from when she first met him. And that always sort of gets to me, that sort of aspect of the doctor changing these companions' lives. I really appreciate how that is sort of dug into in this story. And yeah, Mel and Eva make a great sort of contrast. Like, they don't get wedged into this very artificial conflict. It's very much like, this is what someone post-doctor sort of accepting it looks like, and this is what someone still in the middle of it sort of learning the ropes still is. And yeah, it's just a great sort of way to pair them off, and they have really good chemistry, especially in that second episode.
And one of the nice things about the sort of other side of that episode, the way that Maggie Staples plays Evelyn, is that she's also given this huge kind of emotional palette to play with. And so the idea that she's moved on from the doctor, she's moved on from her life traveling in time and space to settle down with, with a good man, never feels like kind of like the lazy cliche of a companion who leaves for love. You know, this isn't like some contrived Leela situation or whatever. And there's just such a nice kind of range to the way that Evelyn can sort of have moved on from her life, but still also be terribly wounded by the fact that the doctor didn't turn up to her wedding, or that it's taken him like a few years before he turns up at all. And it's not because the doctor is being malicious, it's not because he's being cruel, it's just, you know, that's him, that's what he's like. So even although she's sort of moved on kind of emotionally, she still has that emotional attachment there nevertheless. And that's, again, that feels like really good writing. That just feels exactly how Evelyn would respond to that kind of situation.
And while we're on Maggie Staples, it is such a shame, as we said, that she is passed out for all of episode 3 and most of episode 4, and we get so little of her outside of maybe a few flashbacks. Because what little she's given, she does so well with.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the scene with her and the Seventh Doctor, McCoy playing off of her, which is something we're not going to see much more of, unfortunately, because they also have really good chemistry. But that scene with Hex, we can get more into that maybe in a second, but also the final scene of the story is also a beautiful one with her and the Doctor, and just having this moment of, I love you, and she knows he can't respond because he's just too alien of a guy and doesn't really know how to express those emotions. And also, like, she is the 100th more even person he has traveled with, but it's that sort of disparity and her being accepting of that is such a wonderful little character beat. Like, it makes so much sense for both characters and manages to be sweet, even if a one-sided confession of love usually isn't that sweet.
Oh, no, it's a lovely kind of end there. And, that McCoy scene is just, wow, that carries a real punch to it. And it's kind of weird because the whole thing about Cassie, that's already settled. You know, that was settled in Arrangements for War. So it's a bit odd to have a scene here which tries to sort of settle it again. We know that Evelyn came to sort of understand what happened there. You know, that's kind of the point of the end of Arrangements for War, is that they gain this acceptance, and then in the end they will sit back and watch two people in love rather than try to interfere again or whatever. That's what the sort of the end of that play is about. And so it's a bit weird to have her say, oh, right, but Hex is actually, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's a bit, it's slightly odd, but I love McCoy turning up here. It was the Wormery that had the same thing, which had McCoy just turning up for like one scene at the end of the play. It's not a trick that you can use too often, but especially with that manipulative, or whatever you want to call it, Seventh Doctor, it's so lovely to be able to have stories like this where he can sort of pop in and sort of fulfill that role in a way that, of course, he never ever could during the TV show, because obviously that's not how linear television works. But it's just great to have it there. McCoy is just fantastic in that role. And yeah, whilst of course it's not something we're going to get, it would have been lovely to see more sort of McCoy and Maggie Staples together.
Well, not to spoil too much for listeners who may be following along with us through the main range, but there is one more story that gives a proper send-off to Evelyn, even more proper, let's say, that does have McCoy have a few scenes with Evelyn near the end, if I remember correctly, but we'll get to that in time. Of course, we'll cover Death in the Family. But until then, Yeah, that one scene is so fantastic. And I do think, I mean, the reason they have to have that scene is because of this plan with Hex has like reaches back farther and will reach into the future farther. And I don't know whoever was sort of story editing Big Finish at this time and coming up with these sort of master plans, but it is one that this sort of piece needs to be put in place. Otherwise, it would feel weird to not have Evelyn know that she knew Hex's mother like that. But yeah, it works well as not just this continuity sort of step. It works as just its own thing, which is sort of the brilliantness of it. You have this one flash from Maggie Stables just being overjoyed that there is a bit of legacy of Cassie that has survived, and the Doctor has found him through this cosmic coincidence, and that is really beautiful.
Well, yeah, it is. It just works so well, and it's so unforced. I think that's the reason that it kind of lands. And it seems odd to say that it's unforced because, of course, it's really. I mean, like the Seventh Doctor drops in to provide some continuity and then immediately leaves again. That sounds extremely forced, but it's not. And I think it's because it's written well, it's extremely well acted, and everybody has that opportunity to just like give it their all. It's a very quiet scene. It's very kind of. Just emotional without it sort of being kind of cliche. It just works, and it's such a difficult thing to get right. It would be so easy for something like that to sort of tip over into melodrama or whatever, but it's handled very shrewdly, very skillfully, and that's sort of what makes it work. We don't need a single word more or less for the Seventh Doctor, and just that acknowledgement for Evelyn is all we need. And I said, even although the thing with Cassie was basically already settled, just like Maggie Staples can sell the hell out of anything, and gosh, does she ever.
Completely agreed. Before we get off the main cast, I guess let's talk about the one who's given the shortest shrift in the story, which is Colin Baker, who gets a lot of fun moments, but is stuck in the very sort of exposition-heavy and plot-relevant storyline, which is a little unfortunate use of his talents. And no ding on Colin Baker, or even like his scene partner Gabriel Wolfe as Rossiter. They are both fantastic. They're just unfortunately, spending most of episodes 2 and 3 and 4 running around figuring out the mystery, almost with mystery in air quotes because it's so slight, and delivering a bunch of exposition, running a bunch of silly action scenes. It's just not the best use of their talents at all.
No, it's not. I mean, I think Colin Baker does well with the material that he's given, but it's not that he's given very much. And again, that's a bit odd because, this is supposed to be the story that concludes the relationship between Evelyn and the Doctor. So for the Doctor to have that kind of comparatively diminished role feels like an odd choice. And the moments that they do get together, especially again in that last episode where the Doctor finally gets to give Evelyn away when she and Rossiter confirm their wedding vows, it's a lovely moment. And of course, that sheer warmth and joy between Maggie Stables and Colin Baker just sort of radiates out of the speakers. But it's just, yeah, we needed more of those moments. And it's not Colin Baker's fault. He's absolutely fine here, but he's just not given as much to work with. And he gets a lot of huffing and puffing when it comes to sort of, oh, I've revealed the bad guy's plans and you're evil and that's terrible. And oh no, how could you bad person? But it's pretty standard fare, really. And it doesn't give him an awful lot to go on.
Yeah, the whole mystery villain part of the story is very weak. It is strange how Paul Sutton seems to be trying to keep the identity of the villain secret, and you're sort of in the air whether it's Sebastian behind it all, Sophia behind it all, or a third party, when it should be so obvious from the start. Because obviously Sebastian is behind it all, and the fact that characters keep talking about Sophia being behind it all doesn't track at all with Rachel Pickup's performance or what she's done in the story, or the fact that we keep cutting to her trying to solve the mystery herself. And then once Sebastian is dead, there's only one culprit, only one other major character, unless you think Jenner is going to pull some sort of surprise heel turn.
That
It just
would
comes
have
so
been a
obvious.
surprise.
It would have been, yeah, not a good one.
No,
So,
I didn't say a good one, but it would have been a surprise.
yeah. So it really has to be Zabo. And it's pretty easy. I can't remember exactly how quickly I pegged it when I first listened to it all those years ago, but it wasn't that hard. And that
Well,
is.
The bad guy's the one that's giving the big fruity mustache twirling performance. It's really yes. not difficult to figure it out.
It is very weird that Sutton chose to sort of go down that road, like play up the mystery of it all when we can use process of elimination. Give us some credit as listeners. So it is a little weird. And that structure of the story that way means there's a lot of drawing out what's going on and a lot of sort of exposition building all these clues. And we finally get to the final confrontation and things are revealed, it wraps up extremely quickly and very uninterestingly.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that, of course. But I think one of the things with the way that whole sort of denouement comes together, I mean, partly it's definitely the way that Paul Sutton has written it. As you say, credit us with some intelligence. But I do think a lot of that is down to sort of Patrick Rummer's performance as well. It just, I mean, it gives the game away from the first time he rolls his little sibilant voice around those lines. And yes, I am a bad boy. How could you? There's so much of that going on. I mean, the big twist would have been if he hadn't been the bad guy, you know? The way that he poisons himself, the way that suicide happens, is very offhanded, I suppose, is the word that I would use. And there's something quite... pleasing isn't quite the right word. I quite like it, but I'm sort of slightly at a loss to explain why. I like how casual it is. I like the way that he doesn't actually end up with a big like melodramatic moment. He doesn't like pull a gun out and shoot himself or throw himself out a window or some other kind of like traditional bad guy way of sort of offing himself. He just very slowly pours his drink and like nobody realizes what's happening until it's far, far too late to do something about it. And the way that he refuses somebody a drink just by saying, oh no, it's a terrible vintage, I wouldn't force this on anyone, and then he takes it himself, and then that's how he kills himself. I quite like that, but as I say, I'm kind of at a loss to explain why.
No, I like it too. For starters, it does that very much sort of Ozymandias from Watchmen trope of I've already done the thing and you can't stop it.
Yeah,
that's a staple that I really like when done well, and I think in this specific moment it's done well. When they take the micro view, it's done well. I think Patrick Rummer plays that scene very well. I think it would be a very sort of class interesting move if it was in a better story. I think that's the big thing, is that is the climatic denouement to the story that has taken up so much airspace, specifically airspace away from these central characters that we're more invested in. And then just like, all right, it's all wrapped up. And just because he killed himself, I mean, I don't want like an action scene with the Doctor where they chase him down a hall or something, or where they have to fight off a bunch of these zombie patients to get to him and arrest him. But it's at the same time, from like a macro point of view, it's just very pat and very just sort of, and now it's over. And that seems, it's a bit disappointing. And I think because it sort of lacks a big climatic denouement from any other corner, when it was building to one in that sort of main, like the main conflict story, I guess is the best way to put it, then yeah, that is a problem. Because in the moment by itself, if there was some more climatic scene before it, that would have been a great little denouement to the character just to sort of off himself in that very classy way. As it is, it just feels like too pat and deflating.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think, they try to give it a bit of emotional resonance or a bit of punch with that kind of follow-up line saying, oh, he's escaped. As if, presumably as in of justice rather than, a literal fleeing. But, I don't think that one line is quite enough to be able to sort of cover it. I get what they're going for, and the idea that somebody dies before they're brought to justice, they've, in inverted commas, got away with it. There's not quite enough going on there for me to fully buy that, and especially given that his crimes are, we're told that they're so horrific and that he's been the big sigh was because of just like the whole thing with the sort of evil torturing, and it's just so cliche. But anyway, yeah, we're told that he's doing so much, to try and he's been such a bad sort of person, and he's committed all these sort of vile atrocities, and he's been unwittingly experimenting on people without their consent and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, like one line, he's escaped. That's not enough to be able to sort of redress the balance, I don't think.
This story is at such a weird crossroads where it wants to be the smaller character piece and sort of de-escalate from Agnes of War and really focus on the Doctor and Evil's relationship, but then puts so much of the actual time listening to it on this story. And this is the one time where I think Big Finish could have used a longer story. It is, the last episode is like a solid 32 minutes, which is a little on the long side, but the first three are like 20 or under. And I think that may be where it suffers, because we didn't need any more of this story. We could even use less of the whole Kaloran DNA experiment story. But it's really not giving us some of the stuff that it should be theoretically setting up with this sort of small scale.
Well, and also, because we never actually meet any of the Kalorans or have anything other than their situation explained at us, there's no real kind of emotional connection or resonance to their sort of situation. And that resonance that we ought to have with them, you know, we should feel sympathetic towards them. We should feel like the horror and the moral outrage at what's been done to them, the way that they've suffered at the hands of this kind of, I suppose it's a sort of Josef Malenge kind of thing. We ought to feel outraged, but because they're just a plot function, that never arrives. There's never any reason to particularly invest in them, even although, you know, obviously we've listened to Arrangements for War, but even although we know, even explained within the confines of this audio, that they've invaded this planet and they've done terrible things, it's just, it's really hard to get, you know, that much moral outrage over what is essentially just a plot point. And that's a real noticeable failing here, I think.
As I mentioned in the Arrangements for War episode, there is a Kaloran character in the Bernie Summerfield line who is like a very sympathetic three-dimensional character. And so
that's what we needed here.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was about to say.
Sorry.
Thank you for having like the hive mind with me. We needed a Kaloran point of view to sort of articulate that. And props to Thicker Than Water for sort of not just having the Kalorans be stompy, stompy bad guys, to really sort of flip the tables on them and see the other's point of view. Like, no, these are still sentient creatures who deserve respect, but the story doesn't have the room to actually give them that respect from a narrative standpoint. Just tell us that, well, it's wrong to still experiment and torture people who, even if they've invaded a planet. And that is a little bit more nuanced than we get from Doctor Who usually. But still, it's could have gone a little farther. I think that would have helped the story out a lot, for sure.
I think so. And because it's not there, yeah, it means that the actions of Sbarro are just kind of, yeah, they're just kind of there. And I mean, that's also the case when it comes to kind of Evelyn's health issues as well, because we're expected that, like, the whole she's got a dicky ticker, as she's want to refer to it, amounts to exactly nothing, which is hugely, I mean, like, disappointing isn't even the right word for it, because, like, if you're going to introduce something of that nature to a character, it kind of, it's not, it, I, oh dear, how can I say this? It sort of behoves you to do something with it, and nothing is done with this. It's given great emphasis up until this story, and then it's fine, and that's it. It's just, it's such a weird thing to have introduced, and then there's no reason within the confines of this story that Evelyn's heart couldn't have been, like, that was the thing that she was suffering from, or that, you know, she couldn't get the treatment she needed on this planet, or something, you know. We didn't need all the extra stuff with her being injected with Kaloran DNA and it's giving her migraines. She already has a health issue. She doesn't need another health issue on top of that health issue so that we get concerned about yet another health issue. You know, it was fine. It was there, but they don't do anything with it. And that's a really odd choice. It really sort of deflates a lot of the sort of drama and tension out of it. And, like, there's no impact to the fact that she hid the news from the Doctor either. He just sort of goes, yeah, okay, well, yeah, I find out and that's fine, I hope you're okay. And there's no drama that's sort of wrought from it, or there's no nothing. It doesn't fulfill any function. So yeah, that's a really odd way of playing it, I think.
Yeah, that is something that's really frustrating to me as well. And there must have been some sort of behind-the-scenes problems. Problems may even be too harsh. Miscommunication, even. Where, like, a writer introduced this idea of the bad heart, and then, like I said, some mix of Gary Russell, Alan Barnes, Nicholas Briggs. We need, I think, a Big Finish history book out here for us to read so you can fully get a handle on who was making some of these decisions. But whichever writer was, just no one had a good idea of where to go with it, was what it feels like to me. Just from the outsider perspective, it just felt like no one had a good idea of how to pay it off. And so when Paul Stanton came with this pitch of I want to do the Even Goodbye Store, or was assigned this pitch even, like I said, I don't know. But it just felt like they had to perfunctorily wrap it up because they couldn't think of a good way to do it while she was with the Doctor. There was just no story that was calling out to them to inspire them to resolve it. And that is very frustrating because you want... It's like Chekhov's gun never coming off the wall, basically. And when it does in this story, it's more just acknowledged rather than properly brought down. It is given this moment between the Doctor and Evelyn, and it's sort of turned into a bit of a sweet thing, where the Doctor is like, we should have been more open with each other, we should have just communicated better, and, you know, spent so much time together, it still felt like not enough. All that is lovely sentiment, but yeah, it really is sort of cutting that dramatic payoff at the knees, and when it could have been so much better, but I guess we'll never really know what that would look like.
No, we won't. And, you know, again, like, Maggie Stables is great at sort of selling that vulnerability in Evelyn, and, you know, I won't go sort of back over the praise for her, but, you know, she just is really good at that, and she has been in previous stories as well, so... Yeah, just having that kind of there without any sort of great purpose, it's just frustrating. I feel like I'm repeating myself now, but that's what sort of the overriding feeling I get from Thicker Than Water, that there's so many opportunities there that just aren't quite delivered on. Another one is Rossiter's daughter as well. Like the way that she resents Evelyn. Perfectly logical, like perfectly character consistent. It's very easy to imagine a daughter resenting, a new sort of woman coming along and having a relationship with her father. She doesn't get it. She's on the outside. I get all that in practice, but there's something about it that feels, what's the word? Artificial, I think. The conflict feels a little bit artificial. I'm not quite sure why. Maybe it's slightly in the performances. I don't know, but it just feels slightly, artificial. That's the word I'm going to choose for it. So I understand it in a logistical reason or on a sort of story level, but I don't think it quite comes together in the actual sort of final production.
Yeah, it's sort of dreading talking about Sophia because she is such a weak part of this story. And it's unfortunate because it's such a strong idea to be playing with. But I think what it really is we're not diving into the reasons of why she resents Evelyn. We're not being told what makes her attachment to her mother so strong, or even her father so strong, that she resents Evelyn coming into her life. And without even like a scene sort of explaining that, it all feels very forced. It all feels like, yeah, you know this, stepdaughters don't like new mothers, which is not universally true for one thing. It just is sort of assuming us to sort of follow the basic beats of a story that's been told a million times. And that can't be the end-all be-all of the explanation. There needs to be a little more for it to be a satisfying story. And I think Sophia, like, there is a good arc in there where she sort of learns to accept Evelyn by saving her life and sort of seeing her in a more vulnerable place. But, yeah, it really feels flat because we don't get a lot of depth into the character of Sophia. Which is especially because she's in a lot of the story. But we do get the most depth is with her relationship with Sebastian and not her father or her stepmother, which is a weird choice. And so, yeah, I wouldn't blame the performance in this case. I think Rachel Pickup is pretty solid for what she's been given. I just think the problem is that there isn't anything there. Sutton never sells us on what this character's conflict is, why she behaves the way she does, what her stake in opposing evil in the Kaloran research is. There's speculation that's just to get on Evelyn's nerves, and there's nothing to suggest otherwise in the story, which makes her look a lot pettier than she should be. It is very frustrating how that character is treated when there's so much potential to her.
You've just reminded me of Sebastian. I've completely forgotten about him. That's something.
And he takes up a lot of the story.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? And it's really weird because it's a bit of a nothing character. There's just not a lot of sense that these two really have much of a relationship together. And like, we try and get some, you know, friction, not friction, that's the wrong word. We try and get some kind of emotional connection about how they, you know, the flat that Mel and Evelyn are held up in used to be basically their little love nest, and they never did much studying when they were there and all that kind of stuff. But it's inadequate. It doesn't sell us in this kind of relationship as well. That's, you know, that's sort of Sophia's kind of role in this. She doesn't really land her relationship with Sebastian. She doesn't really land that relationship with Evelyn either. You know, I think, again, like maybe the odd redraft or maybe another rewrite could have sort of ironed these problems out, because I think all the solutions to these problems are sort of within the plays. Like, especially, there's something a bit odd about Evelyn just turning up on this planet and like suddenly she's this like brilliant politician, essentially, with no kind of lead up to it. We've never really had any sense that that's something that Evelyn has had in the past. There's maybe hints of it in the way that she behaves in Arrangements for War and she takes up a post there, but it's not really a consistent part of the character as we've come to know her, let's say it that way. And so the fact that she kind of sweeps in and she sort of, marries her father and she becomes this big figure and the idea that Sophia might feel like she's just been pushed to the side, she's been marginalized or whatever, it's so close to being there within this play. Again, that overriding sense of frustration, it's so nearly there. It just needed that one little extra push, that extra few lines that would sort of really help to sort of snap that character into focus, but they're not there. And yeah, that's true with both Sebastian and with Evelyn. And it just needs that extra piece to sort of put it together. I do agree with what you say. I don't think Rachel Pickup is giving a bad performance. I didn't sort of really want to make it sound like that's what I meant when I was talking earlier. I don't know that she has any rapport with Simon Watts as Sebastian. I suspect that might be Simon Watts because he's a bit of an on-presence here. But she's perfectly fine in the role. It's just that the character just doesn't quite have that connective tissue that would really sort of make it sing with these sort of two sort of familial aspects.
I can definitely see how Evelyn could get her position, especially because I don't think there's anything more official than First Lady, right?
Yeah,
like,
basically.
I can see why that could be, she could fit into that role and be respected for that role because she has like a good temperament. And I can see, like, it's believable how she leaves the Doctor. And that is one thing I sort of like about the story, is how it sort of threads that needle between a classic Who goodbye and a new Who goodbye. Where, like, it's very classic Who in that Evelyn meets him and he's like, "All right, Doctor, goodbye." And it almost is sort of a great retcon into, well, this is why the Doctor just abandons Sarah Jane and Leela at the drop of a hat, because he is very terrible at goodbyes in this part of his life, in any part of his life. And yeah, that really works to sort of dig into that. Well, why is he so bad at it? And why can't he really cope with this? And it must be so unsatisfying for these companions that are left behind by him to just suddenly never see him again. And this also is better than those Sarah Jane didn't marry someone, but Leela, and there's plenty of examples that I'm like, Perry, I guess, was an off-screen, another one, but plenty of those examples. And
Joe was the one that I was thinking of, because I think there's a real parallel to the way that the Doctor doesn't hang around for Evelyn's wedding here, and the way that the Third Doctor doesn't hang around after Joe sort of announces her engagement. So yeah, I think Joe is the one to compare it to here. So that's sort of a character consistency with the Doctor, but... I don't know.
I guess my point is that this is a little better than those because it has Arrangements for War as a sort of prelude. So
we can
believe that Evelyn can fall back in a relationship rather than is just meeting this guy and being swept off her feet instantly. And then I think, like New Who, though, it grounds it in those characters. It's not just, all right, your contract's up, goodbye. It is fully embracing this sort of idea of a sort of tearful and emotionally grounded goodbye and what it would mean to those characters, but without the shortcoming of New Who's goodbye, which is they're so melodramatic and over the top almost all the time. I think only Martha gets a goodbye that isn't some huge, final, dramatic, and now you can never see the Doctor again sort of thing. And that is also appreciated because after every other companion leaves after, like, dying or memory wiping or some sort of crazy thing, it's just, I miss just the normal goodbye. And so I think it does have a little, it sort of interrogates both modes. It wouldn't be really interrogating New Who because it would have just finished a season at this point. But you know what I mean. It is, yeah. Feels like a tonic to both of them, even if there are parts that are unsatisfying.
No, I agree. I do like the fact that Evelyn is given a proper conclusion and that there's a real sense that, at this point in Big Finish's history, they're trying to do something that Doctor Who doesn't just traditionally do well. It is that conclusion. It is the fact that there's a solid end to Evelyn's journey, even though we'll get a few more sort of visits with her in the meantime. I like that. And of course, especially now, given that Maggie Stables has passed away, it means that we're not left with a character who we just suddenly never see anymore. Evelyn has a proper conclusion. And that feels kind of grown up and right for a character like Evelyn. You know, she is an older character. She is somebody who's going to have sort of maybe a more finite journey, shall we say, when contrasted with somebody like Mel, who's young and sort of bouncy and energetic and sort of still full of life. Evelyn is at that sort of later stage in life. She's settling down with a much older man as she is a much older woman. And there's a maturity to it that I do really appreciate. I really think it's important that Evelyn's story is one that's given that proper conclusion. And whilst I may quibble about the fact that she's just not in enough of it, the fact that it's there at all is, it really feels like Big Finish are trying to do something that the show should have done a long, long time ago.
I really admire, like I said, the maturity of the story. And that's something that in common with Arrangements for War as well.
Yeah.
It's very much concerned with tackling these sort of emotions characters are having in this very sort of mature, like, not melodramatic, not very excitable, like, I guess the word is, like, juvenile way. Like, when it's talking about Sophia's relationship with Sebastian, it's not leering about that. It's very much this very quiet thing where we used to not study much there, didn't we? And being very sort of, I don't know, coy in a mature way. It's not, you know what I mean. You can see where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I understand.
All these characters are very well thought through and grounded, even if they're not given, like, the right stories to sort of highlight what's interesting about them and are sort of let down by the very plot mechanics of it all.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with all of that. And, I just wish we'd had sort of more of Evelyn in those back two episodes so that we could really have put a bow on it, I suppose. But those last few scenes between sort of Maggie Stables and Colin Baker, they are just lovely. And that warmth and that sort of heartfelt kind of love that exists between these two characters, even if only one of them is capable of expressing it. The story does get there in the end. And ultimately, that's the most important thing. If it hadn't been able to sort of land that final scene, that kind of love between them, then this play would have been found wanting. So it doesn't get there in the way that I think it should have done, but it does eventually get there, and that is important.
That is the perfect note to end our discussion, I feel. So without further ado, let's get to sort of the end of the episode spiel. No letters this week, but you can send us an email at talkingwhotoyou@gmail.com. You can reach us on Twitter at talkingwhotoyou. You can find me on Twitter personally at Kev Koeser, that is KevKoeser. You can find more of JG's writings at www.jgmcquarrie.scott, that is JGMCQUARRIE.scott. Please like, rate, review, and subscribe. It helps other people find the podcast, and it gives us great feedback.
Fantastic, thank you very much. Well, that'll just about wrap it up for Thicker Than Water. Next week, we are going to have a rare outing for the Fifth Doctor and Turlough as we cover Singularity by James Swallow. And, of course, we hope you're going to join us for that. But until then... Keep talking.